We'll start this thing for those people.
Wait, can we start the thing? Sure.
Nope, not yet. What are your questions?
Alright, first question. Last word in the Leia, Taurus side, plural Taurus. What does that mean?
So, Rashi seems to say that it implies not only Tarshish B'Tzav, but also Tarshish B'Alpeh. That he had an insight into things or all the details as well.
Alright, second question. Mm-hmm. Why did Yitzchak love Esav more?
So the Torah itself seems to give one reason. The question is what exactly it means. Yitzayid b'fiv. So the two pshatim that Rashi gives at least are that his trappings were in his mouth. So either that means that it meant that Esav had this way of almost blinding Yitzchak with food, which is a strange shot, or it means that because he was very sneaky in the way he spoke.
Okay. And the second thing that's kind of connected with that is that Yitzchak was told by God that the second would be ruling over the first. So it seems like Yitzchak and Rivka are having two sets of facts.
Did Yitzchak really know that or not?
Why would Yitzchak still, knowing that fact, if he did or did not know that fact, that...
So yeah, that's a bigger question. That's not like a puzzle question. That's sort of like what is going on here between the relationship between Rivka and Yitzchak? How come? I mean, did Rivka share this information with Yitzchak? Right. She didn't share it with Yitzchak. He knew. He didn't know. So that's confusing. It's certainly not clear at all from the psukim. There are different mefarshim explaining these a little bit differently. Did they really know? Did they not really know? Like what was going on over there? So I guess Blin Eder, maybe we should discuss it as like a bigger sort of topic. But it's definitely... It's definitely a very good question. You see, at the end of the day, Rivka felt she had to, trick Yitzchak. So then you have to wonder again, what's the pshat? Was there a lack of communication? Since you
the
Nitziv,
that's the main question. Yeah.
Nitziv seems to indicate that way, that he thinks that there's like a...
It seems like
and I have what to, I have what to say about that too.
Or possibly, or if she wasn't able to, or Yitzchak wasn't listening.
Yeah, I get the impression that the personality that Yitzchak was such an overwhelming person of Kedusha that I'm not sure exactly what the relationship was exactly, or how almost like terrified maybe she was to discuss it, or she expected him to. I don't know. It's definitely a confusing topic. So, Chevra, what is what's the official topic for today?
Basketball.
No.
Sports and
video. It's a good topic. It's a good topic, but that wasn't one of the ones I was mentioning.
We'll give a great show about sports and video.
There was a famous linguist. I really don't know how to pronounce his name, so I won't even try. And he was giving a presentation in one of these linguist conventions. I don't know. Anyway, so there's one of his colleagues was there, and he asked him more or less the following question in English. So we have two words that seem to mean the same thing. They seem really synonymous. And those are complete and finished. So he says, I've been struggling with dictionaries and whatnot to try and figure out the difference between the two, and no one has satisfactorily been able to distinguish between the words complete and finished. Would Your Honor please enlighten us in a understandable, simplistic way? What is the difference between the words complete and finished? To which this linguist responded, when one marries the right person, he is complete. When one marries the wrong person, he's finished. But pity the soul who strays from the first and ends up with the second, for that person is completely finished. But pity the soul who strays from the first and ends up with the second, for that person is completely finished. I'm not sure I thought what he meant by that. He said, if you marry the right person, you're complete. Wrong person, you're finished. But then he said, pity the soul who strays from the first and ends up with the second. that person is completely finished. I assume that means like he met his first wife, rejected her or whatever, and ended up looking for somebody else. So then you're that guy's completely finished. He was completed and then he was finished. So he's completely finished. Anyway. So what do you want to know about dating?
When's the right time to start thinking about it? Start actually dating. I know it's different for everyone, but like what's going through your mind at that time? Also, just general things we should know about dating. I know a lot of people before they date, they go to the Rebbeim and they ask. I mean, the Rebbeim give them a whole rundown. So if you give that in short, and then cool.
So I can try to just to tell you some things that occurred to me, but definitely I would prefer if there's certain things that you're considering or bothering you, certainly much more worthwhile to just, yeah.
Also, I mean, when it's right financially,
right?
Because that has an effect. Yep. When it's right, because if you're shown an idea and you date,
if.
But it's rather general, hopefully, also.
Since one has to be Shomer Negiyah, yeah, okay. It's not optional. Okay. Yeah.
No, that's neither is are many other things. Some people don't follow some things. That's why I said
remote ox. Remote ox.
I can sure hold off too long being Shomer Negiyah, just not going to end up. Because I feel like I imagine from what I've heard. The majority of people that say that they're Shomer Negiyah while dating, especially in the more modern Orthodox world where they're dating for about a year or so, a lot of them aren't actually Shomer Negiyah. It's just a cover up. They say that they're Shomer Negiyah, they're not. So how do you like prevent that? And how do you? I mean, you can say like, yeah, get married in 3 months, but a lot of people don't want to do that because that's very difficult.
Okay, so let's start in the beginning and then chime in, and if I forget to mention, just remind me. So first things first, so a person's at a stage where he's not yet dating, or at least not seriously, so what's the story with all of that? So the topic obviously begins with the whole concept of what does it mean a platonic relationship, is there such a thing, all those kinds of things. And I think we all know that in a lot of situations we get ourselves into trouble more than we benefit from those types of relationships because it creates all kinds of problems and tensions, I think is the right word, all kinds of tensions, and it's really... It's really not kedai, but everyone in their own world has their own baggage and own backgrounds, so I guess we don't really need to deal with that particularly. But then the question becomes, okay, but now I am ready to, or I think I'm ready, I'm not sure I'm ready to actually start dating. So dating means that a person is ready to get married. If a person is certainly not ready to get married, for whatever reason he feels he's not ready to get married, so then one should not be dating, because what are you doing? You're just causing yourself troubles.
What are some reasons that someone
is immature.
What?
Immature.
Or he doesn't know completely. What do you
The question is, what? When would a person not be ready? Or why? What's legitimate as a reason not to be ready? That's your question? So, the first thing that many people assume is legit, that probably is not necessarily so legit, but one has to know practicalities. This is not a hashkafa point, it's just a practicality. Well, let's say a person is not working yet, a person doesn't have money. So what's the story? Is that a legitimate reason to say, well, I'm not interested or not, I shouldn't get married now because how am I going to support my wife myself? That's an interesting cheshbon. Certainly one could argue that point. There's no question you could argue the point in terms of independence, in terms of what it means that a wife looks at her husband as the breadwinner and then her respect for him because of that. I have a ma'aseh that I'm involved in where basically he lost his job, she lost her job, but she's much more motivated than he is, and now he has no job, she has a job, and now she looks down on him, and it's a really big shalom bias problem. So, one could make a solid argument in that direction. However, generally speaking, that's not a great cheshbon to make unless one is aware that it's really going to create a lot of problems. Because, if even from a practical perspective, let's say the person doesn't get married. So who's supporting him? Parents. And what about her? Who's supporting her? Her parents. Let me ask you a financial question. Is it cheaper to spend money on half of a rent or a full rent? In other words, so if a person speaks to their parents in a normal way and says, listen, I'm considering getting married. I can't afford an apartment. But listen, seriously, would you be willing to support us for a couple of years till I finish college paying half the rent instead of the full rent you're paying now? If I wasn't married, you have to be the whole rent. If I get married, so we'll get her parents to be happy. You guys will be happy. Actually, be saving money. So, you could make
this. Your parents also. Some
what?
People's You have to know your parents also.
Of course.
Some people's parents are willing to support them first.
Some people's parents have the attitude that you're not going to get married and I'm not supporting you once you get married because you're independent. I want you to be independent and therefore I'm going to force you to be independent by not supporting you when you get married.
And it's also kind of unreasonable to have that mindset of I won't get married until I'm making money because some, let's say people in med school, they're going to be in school for another eight years or so and a lot of them aren't working because they're studying their brains out all day.
From a practical perspective, just from simply a practical perspective. If you want to tie it in and say, okay, well, what's the hashkafa satar? Like, what does the Torah tell me? So then you start dealing with mitzvahs. In terms of getting married per se, it's a machlokus in the Rishonim, if there's any real mitzvah to get married, or if that's just what's called a hechsher mitzvah, the way you go about accomplishing having children, which is a very interesting perspective. You mean the Torah says I'm supposed to get married just to have kids? What about the relationship I'm supposed to have with my wife? Isn't that part of it also? So yeah, in a chanami, of course, as a development of a person. In fact, Kedushas Levi, the Halig of Rabbi Levi Yitzhak, my brother Dicha, so he writes, why do I need to know the Yitzhak loved his wife? Is that important? Does it say every single personality that ever is written about the Torah that's married, that he loved his wife? The Yitzhak loved his wife was unusual? So the Beis HaLevi writes, and it's hard to know, he writes so little, but the gist of what he says is that the love the Yitzhak had for his wife was not a love that was a taiva, it wasn't a lust, it wasn't chas v'shalom rooted in like a yetzahara, that she was so beautiful or something like that. That his love for her was with an understanding that she is the one that's going to perfect him, not the finished, the complete. She's the one that's gonna allow him to become complete in what it means for him, which probably meant a lot more than we could ever imagine, what it means to create Klal Yisrael and all those kinds of things. It's probably a much higher madriga than we'll ever really appreciate. But bottom line is for our, if you want to transpose it into our life, so it means to say, have you ever read Rav Arush on this? Anybody read any Rav Arush on, okay. He Kedarkoi, he has like a basic yisoy that he spends the rest of the book just kind of developing different examples of. Is that true? Piece, I think, is where he talks about this one. So, the basic gist of what he says, and I don't know how far you want to go with this, I'm not a breast of class, but it's interesting. What he says is that, based on the Rizal, Kabbalah, that a woman is a mirror for the husband. Now, that's a fascinating thing to say. What is a mirror? Number one, it's a reflection. A reflection of him. And number two, when does the mirror change? When does the image in the mirror change?
When you change.
So those are the two yesodos that basically run through the Sefer. He says women aren't supposed to read this. And it's fascinating to consider that because that means that, number one, a person can see in his wife's responses to him what he needs to work on. And number two, that when he works on that, her responses then will change accordingly. Which means you shouldn't criticize her, because that's pointless. You should criticize yourself, and then she'll change along with you. That's his story to the entire Sefer.
She won't tell you straight up.
She doesn't know that.
Or when a person changes, their wife changes.
Yeah.
I mean, when a person changes, you should be getting
into
one.
Unless
she changes with him, because they're one unit. They're really one thing. They're one neshama, the core. Anyway, so that's a fascinating thing. So number one, in terms of getting married, forget Puravu for a minute. There certainly is that idea that a person is perfecting himself with his wife. And in fact, so our Rebbe Rav Kahn, so he likes to say that when a person is looking to get married, so basically what a person should be looking for is basically, you know, Yiras Shamay. Does she have Yiras Shamay? That's the main category we're looking for. Okay, well, a lot going on here, but we'll put aside for a minute. Obviously, a person has to see his wife. We learned that, right? It's also Shekadesh, it's Ishad Shirana. A person has to see his wife before he marries her. Behaf the Recha Kamoicha, right? At the very beginning of our Sugi, we've been learning this year that we don't ever Chas or Shalom want to get into a situation that's going to have animosity involved in it. So the dating process has to be appropriate to set the tone for that relationship. But be that as it may, we have a concept called Bashert. When we talk about Bashert, it means the day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has predestined a certain woman for this man. Tyler, going with what you had mentioned a couple of minutes ago in your questions, so Rav Kahn likes to say, you know what's Bashert? Bashert are those things. And he's not saying this in a technical neshama sense. He's saying this in a practicality sense. Bashert means those things you never know while you're dating. Bashert means those things you could never know about your wife when you're dating. What does he mean by that? After you get married, you'll realize there are a bunch of things about your wife that you never really could have even realized when you're dating. I'll be Allah. And those things are bashert, meaning that's exactly what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants you to work on. That's exactly the way that a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants you to grow. You know, sometimes a person, unfortunately, will marry someone that has all kinds of anger issues, all kinds of, you know, anxiety issues or whatever. And okay, so that may exactly be part of the avoda of the spouse, is to be able to negotiate that and to be able to figure out how to become a more patient, a more sensitive, this, that, and the other thing. In other words, instead of looking for opportunities to get a divorce and say, well, this person, this person, this person, you know, that's an opportunity for these issues to be worked on and the people to grow through them. Because at Bashar, these are things you never could have known before you got married. So that's all part of personal growth, to realize that marriage is a major commitment. And commitment means that divorce is not in the purview. We're not entering the relationship. Well, if it doesn't work out, I'm going to always, you know, press the reset button. We go into it understanding that this person is my Bashar. And that whatever issues come up are issues that are what I need to grow from. Just like we would say that with anything that happens in life to us, that if this is our life and this is the path that we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us on, so everything that comes our way is a challenge for us to grow.
So how do you know if it's your Bashar?
Don't.
So like, if I use a lot of any girl that I end up really liking and dating and then getting married, that's my Bashar. I have to work through it for the rest of our lives. And everyone in the world that gets divorced, that wasn't their Bashar.
Right. So that's a pretty complicated question. You know, the question being like, how do you know what who's the Bashert? Yeah.
I think when you get divorced, it's either one, like you just said, that that wasn't the right person, or two, you thought it was the right person and you were wrong, and it really was the right person, you didn't work things out with her. And there's a two.
That I understand, the second one I understand, the first one, how do you, but why, when you know that's a Bashert?
Okay. So hold on 1 second. So in terms of getting involved in that and in the parasha, so there's certain cheshbonos that are going to be legit, certain cheshbonos less legit.
You're getting
so
involved in what?
I'm trying to do this in like a structured way, sort of jumping around, but if maybe we should jump around if those questions are more important. But in terms of trying to get a mahalach, so the first issues you want to deal with are, so what are legitimate cheshbonos, calculations, thought processes, when I'm going to get involved, and when it's good to not get involved yet. So I don't have a pen. Does anybody have a pen? There used to be a pen on the desk, but it seems to be gone.
It's
not
looking
at
it. I
okay, so in terms of getting involved, so number one is that when a person is getting married, for what purpose? Number one is for you. For you meaning that even though there may be machlokes rishonim, purpose of marriage, is it for pru or vu or not? Is there a mitzvah of getting married? So one could develop that into a philosophical difference between, well, what's the focus of mine supposed to be on this marriage? Is it on the growth that I am going to have with this person? That's what we're focusing on right now. Or is it that I'm trying to produce a family and I'm trying to mekayim the mitzvah puravu? Which, of course, has to be taken into account as well, that a person doesn't get into a marriage assuming, oh, well, we're just going to go on birth control and never have kids. That's also not okay. Now, a person may be wanting to get married because maybe he's having tremendous taiva issues. That's a good question. Is that something he should try to get in control a little bit more before he gets married? But maybe that's the best way to control himself is to get married also. So that's definitely a calculation a person has to make with himself. Is this person really having, in other words, what's more important to a therapist or a wife? But don't assume that your wife's going to be your therapist. So if there's a serious issue that's happening over here, so then maybe it's not the best idea to get married yet if there's really such an issue. But at the same time, if a person is just a normal person, and a person has all kinds of taivas, so yeah, so they're going to be channeled properly, mirtz Hashem, by getting married. That's a very positive thing. At the same time, if a person's trying to do that, he's probably getting married a lot earlier. Maybe it's not practical to have children. So that becomes a very serious birth control shaila, and that's something that when that happens, notice that's not the cheshbon to begin with. That's not the cheshbon you begin with. But once a person does find that the one he wants to marry, and they're going to get married, and now they're going to have that question, that's a question that needs to be asked at that time. Should we be on birth control? Should we be on birth control? What should we do? But don't make that the calculation. Well, I'm not ready to get married because I'm not ready to have kids. We'll worry about that down the road when that becomes an issue. So, fine. So that's two things in terms of getting involved. Are you ready to get married? Are you ready to be a husband? What about psychologically? What about in terms of a person's maturity? Is a person really ready for that? So maybe yes, maybe no. But I'll tell you something, honestly. The first year or longer, whatever, you get married, you're going to look at yourself like, this is weird. I'm married. I'm a little kid. And we go through this in life until we've done it long enough that we can like look back on it and say like, wow, it feels like I've been doing this forever. When I was a kid, my parents moved around a lot. So what happened inevitably to me was that I came to a new school and I was surrounded by new friends and I felt totally out of place. The new kid. Until enough time went by that everybody in the chevra, like it's hard to remember before you were part of the chevra. And that's when we would move. You know, it's kind of how I felt growing up. But the point is that that's how life goes. And that we're going to look at ourselves as we're dating and be like, this is crazy. Like, I'm still like a little, you know, high school guy. And now I'm like, I'm dating, I'm getting ready to get married. And you're not, you can't wait until you don't feel like that. Because you're going to feel in where you are, in that part of life that you're at. After you get married, you're going to be like, this is so bizarre. Like, how am I married? And then eventually, a few years back, you'll look back on it and be like, okay, like, I've been married forever. But that's also, again, not a cheshbon for that reason. Because you can't say, well, when I feel I'm ready, you're never going to feel you're married. It's something that only happens in retrospect. So, but a person knows himself. A person knows, I'm really, you know, I have certain issues that it's just not gonna work yet. I'm not ready for this. Okay, it could be certain things. You got to figure out what specifics those might be. So when a person feels that he, does that make sense? Is there anything that you want to ask on in terms of that? More specific, like, I'm not ready to get married because of? On a technical level, if a person's old enough, he's 18, he's 19, whatever, technically speaking, he should be involved in the mitzvah puruvu. But the question is it practically feasible? Most of the time, it's practically feasible. You just have to work it out with your parents, you got to work it out with the in-laws, you got to figure out how we're really going to make it work. Yeah. Okay. So now that ties into the other issue of how do you know that this woman is Basheret?
Man, basically, just building off Yael's question. What is? I know there's a lot of different ways for shidduch and type stuff, like whether it's like a resume or it's getting set up with people. What's like the classic or what's the norm and what would you suggest?
I'm not doing resume. I heard that. I'm not doing resume.
Okay. Let's spell it out like this. The issue, the problems that come up in dating, and it's going to come up, you know, with everyone at some point, is we have trouble distinguishing between a girl that's great for me and a girl that I'm really attracted to.
Yeah.
Because a lot of, again and again, I've seen it, that there's a girl that all the friends can tell, the Rebbe can tell, this girl's bad for this guy. She, you know, she's overpowering, she's whatever, she's not good for this guy. But he doesn't see it. Mamish, he doesn't see it. Why doesn't he see it?
Lust.
Either because she's very beautiful, or because he's not Shomer Nagiyah.
I mean, how can the Rebbe see it? It's true.
Because a guy will sit down with me, and he'll describe an issue that he's having with this girl. And I'll be like, she's incredibly controlling. Like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? And I'll be like, really? You think she's controlling? Like, it's obvious from this conversation. She's just keep on bullying the guy. Like, what is with you? You don't see the way she's talking to you? You don't see the way she's trying to control your life? You don't see this? Telling you shouldn't talk to your friends? What in the world's going on over here? You're not even married. You're just dating the girl. You're only been out once. You're like, whatever. You know, like, what is going on right here? And he doesn't see it. Anyway, no, but that's the truth. Is that so? We get very blinded. Number one, stop by taiva. And number two, on all seriousness, if a person is not keeping proper halacha, so he will be blinded.
That's a huge problem. I think that's my biggest problem, being blinded by, like,
correct.
Because especially...
Now, that's what leads us to this other issue. The issue is, so then how in the world do I avoid that? So the answer is by not dating a girl because she's beautiful. It doesn't mean, no, don't date beautiful girls. You should date beautiful girls. But what I'm trying to say is that don't start the relationship because she's beautiful and I don't know a thing else about her. That's the whole concept of shiduchim. That's the whole concept of a resume, whatever you want to call it, however it's working, bizman hazeh. It weren't really resumes in my time, really. But the point is that what people are trying to do is trying to make sure that this makes sense before they start the date. Because if it makes sense on paper, we want the same things. We have the same values. We have the same dreams. We have the same goals. We're coming from the same place.
How do you see that?
Right. So either you speak to people that are setting people up, you got to be careful with friends. Friends don't always know what they're doing. But if you have older people that have more experience in these things, so they'll tell you, personality you never know. Because sometimes people are attracted to the exact opposite personality that they have, and that's fine. A lot of times you can see it in a person's parents. They marry the same people that are like, you know, that their parents marry. You see it a lot. Yeah, whatever. You don't want to say it. You don't want to admit it.
What?
But it's very true.
That's Freudian.
Okay, yeah, but it's very true. People have, they raised a certain way, and they envision things a certain way. So
yeah, some character traits will be similar to my mom. Yeah, but they're not going to be similar.
It's very possible that the girl that you'll be looking for may have certain personality traits that like your mother, just because that's what you're drawn to. Anyway, but that's not the point. The point is that it's usually.
You said it again.
It usually doesn't. I know someone who I was involved with the parents, and I'm involved with the children. One of the children that got married, and exactly the same marital issue that I dealt with the parents, I see happening by one of the kids. Exactly the same thing. It's unbelievable to me, but okay. Anyway, it's very difficult. In other words, you can't make a shidduch based on personality. Because who knows? But what you can do is you can say, like, these people have very similar backgrounds. I went on a date once. Now, I'm not your classic Baal Tshuva, but I came from a very conservative background. My father was a conservative rabbi, and I always went. I was like U.S. I was the religion education vice president of my religion, my region in USY, Cruzy. So like I came from a certain background. So I was set up with this like very yeshivish girl, and not the one that I married. And the date was her basically like, you know, what an interesting specimen. Let me ask him all these questions. You know, I was like very uncomfortable. Like, this is not what I had in mind in terms of going on a date with you. Getting to know each other. This is like, you know, oh, you're like, you're going to write an essay about Baal Tshuva. You're interviewing me. This is not what I had in mind. It could work, but it's, you know, it's not necessarily the most likely shidduch to make. So what I'm trying to say is that a lot of times if you have like a resume, if you have a shadchan that's going to set people up, they're looking to see, well, on paper, does it make sense? Do they have the same value systems? Do they have the same background? Are they the types of people? How am I going to know that they're going to have what you call chemistry? That's the second most important thing to look for in a girl. Number one is your shamayim, or two is chemistry between you and her.
Yeah, but when you have a friend set you up, they actually know you, and they'll most likely know that the girl you're setting up. When you have a shadchan setting you up, you never know if I just put certain things on my resume to kind of make me look good, and certain things like that. That's and also the same with the girls, so you're losing a lot
that's
of
why
that
the person.
That really depends on if you have a good shadchan or a bad shadchan. The shadchan knows the person, doesn't know the person, you know. But so there's a spectrum obviously there. But the point being that to the extent that it does make sense in a more abstracted way. So then you can go on a date, and if that girl's attractive, whatever. Of course, you know, that's fine. That'll help the shidduch. But at least we know when we start that we're on the same page. You with me?
Yeah, but I still also get, I don't know, my mind.
But you hear what I'm saying? In other words, that's fine. That's fine. Because once you know.
As long as you're separate the right way.
Right. As long as you know that this makes sense. It's a good family. This is the type of family you want to marry into. It's not like, you know, sometimes, what's the opposite? The opposite is that you're on whatever you're on, you know, NCSY, whatever it is, and there's a girl, and she's beautiful, so you're attracted to her, and you don't realize that her father's a serial killer, and like, you know, whatever, it's the way it is, but at least she's a nice girl. But you marry into the family, and then like, you know, the guy's in jail, and then, whatever.
I always have this argument with my parents, who they're always like telling me, Julian, when you're ready to get married, you cannot marry a girl from a broken family. And I always say, no, that's not that. How can you say that? Like, you can't judge this girl based on her family. What if I was from a broken family? What if you guys got married or divorced? Like, what? The girl's going to judge me differently because of you?
They're just going to have to be careful.
So, like, no, but like, I we argued out. They still have the conclusion that they're still of the mindset that, no, you're not married.
Well, Julie, let me ask you a different question. If I would present you with two girls, one of them comes from a family that you anticipate. Listen, nothing's ever guaranteed. But you anticipate this is a family that's together. There are no divorces in the family. There's no serial killers in the family. You know, no one's in jail. Oh, and I have another girl where it's the exact opposite. Now you have the option. Well, which one are you going to date first?
I'm going to date the one that's messed up. No, I'm joking. I'm going to date
I'm serious.
I'm going to date the good one. But it's not who's going to marry that girl then?
I don't know. Mirza Shem, someone will marry her. She's somebody's bishop. But that's not your problem. Your problem is you have to create your future.
But if it's a case where you like meet a girl you really like, and then you find out, it's that's like not a great family.
What'd you say?
If you meet a girl you really like, and you go to...
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. That's a problem. That's a problem.
Shotgun knows the family's situation.
Well, sometimes more, sometimes less. Depends on the situation, obviously, you know. But theoretically, these are the types of questions that you would want to know l'chatchila. You want to start off in the right direction when you're planning your future.
Is it, what's your opinion on, or maybe you're involved with this, that people go on maybe 1, 2, or 3 dates and they know that they're going to get married? Do you think that's...
I've never heard of someone do that. 3 dates?
Doesn't make children?
Yeah. 3 dates.
There are different components to answer this question. The extreme answer to the question is that if you don't know if it's possible to marry this woman after the 4th date, then you're doing something wrong. Now, you may not be ready yet because you feel you're not comfortable enough or whatever, but if you have no insight into this girl and you have no idea if this could theoretically work by the 4th date, something's wrong.
You're dating wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going on. So that's point A. Point B is that you have to know yourself. You have to know your background. But, okay, we'll get to the other question everyone was wondering about. The end game of that is, well, then how long are you going to date? And that leads to all the problems that everybody already spelled out. I don't really need to even answer that question. Because what do you mean? Everybody knows it's a big problem. I am attracted to this girl. That's why one of the reasons I want to marry her.
And another big problem.
So how am I going to be Shomer Nagi and how is this not going to become a problem?
When a couple are dating for a certain amount of time, I feel like there's also the hurdle that the time there to want to see if you guys are sexually
compatible
exactly. Like how like wait what we're gonna get married and we're not even sure if we're actually like, sexually attracted to, but I mean you could right away put that down by if you're attracted to someone emotionally, most of you the majority of them would be sexually attracted to them as well. But like a lot of people just want to make sure, therefore they bring their shomer negiya.
So this is one of the things I was kind of trying to foreshadow before, is that certain things in a relationship are basheret. This is Rokatan's basheret. There's certain things that you will not know. That is going to be one of them. What exactly will be that degree of compatibility on those levels? We don't know. Okay, so then that means...
What's the mindset for that?
The mindset is, by everything else in this relationship, that it all depends on communication and commitment to making it work.
At the end of the day, the reason why you're getting married is for Guru. Therefore,
it's at least those two factors. It's at least the idea that you're trying to grow yourself. She's trying to grow herself. You want to create that complete person along with her. In addition, you want to create a family. You want to produce children for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You want to be able to be part of a community. I mean, there's a lot to marriage other than just for
producer. That's maintenance. So that's what you said in the beginning.
Well, I said there are two components, right? I said, Machlekes v'shainim. It's Machlekes v'shainim. If there's a mitzvah to get married, or the mitzvah is puravus. If the mitzvah is puravus, then okay, the focus would be on the family and all those other things. If the mitzvah is the marriage itself, so then you can make a philosophical argument that there's a whole other component to marriage, which is the development of the personality. What?
It is a mitzvah.
It's Machlekes v'shainim.
And what if you're dating, like, let's say someone's dating right now, a girl that they've been dating for years, and they know that they're not sure what it is, but like they're religious, I guess, yeah. And they're trying, and like he sees that he should get married to her. Would you say no to that because they weren't sure what it is before they dated?
No. I wouldn't say no. The question is, just because people have been involved for a long time, in whatever way they've been involved, does that mean there's any reason to say, no, this is a bad relationship? Not necessarily. I've seen people that have been in those scenarios, you know, some more successful, some less, whatever. People have statistics about these things that they throw around, but it's hard to know. In other words, there's some sort of crazy statistic that people that were sexually involved before marriage, so, you know, there's like an, I don't know, whatever the percentage is, like it doesn't work out. But the question is, it's not causative. The question of what's that factor that's involved over there? Is that because people have a certain attitude, a certain looseness, a certain physicality? Maybe they had lots of girlfriends. Like, you don't know. A statistic like that is pretty useless. It just means to say that, okay, you know, people were a certain way before they got married. So what nakuda is that may have affected their attitude towards their marriage and their commitment to it or whatever? But I think the bottom line is that there are going to be a lot of things that you're not going to know. And those things are bashert. Those are the things that we have to work on. We have to have honest communication about with our spouse. And you have to be able to use those opportunities to grow. And that requires commitment. And an understanding that we're going to communicate.
The right girl, the wrong time, is the wrong girl. He's like, I mean, that's the one thing my friend told me. He said, like, when I was in Israel, like, I had, like, whatever, a relationship. But, like, and I was like, oh, it's the right girl. But he said, listen, it's the wrong time. So he said it like this. Right girl, you can think that she's perfect for marriage, everything's amazing, but if it's the wrong time for you, where you're in a yeshiva and you're trying to grow and everything is like, if it's the wrong time for you, it's the wrong girl. And as you grow as a yid, as you grow as a person, Bashar, I think, is constantly changing. That's the way I see it.
There are two types of Bashar. There's one that's like designated, you know, from birth, and then there's another Bashar that wherever a person may be, if he's not exactly where he could have been, should have been, whatever. So there's also a Basher that's prepared for that. Now, I will tell you something that I do think is very important. So I don't know why everyone has to be on their phones. This is a boring topic or something. But I will tell you the following. Let's say that you're a Rav and you're looking for a shul. So you meet a whole bunch of people. And you go to the shul, you meet people in the community. And you realize the people are holding X. I'm playing X. Now, what do you do about accepting the job? Do you accept the job because you anticipate you can get them to a different level? Or are you there to service the people on the level they're at? Is it a combination of the two? And is it the same cheshbon, is it the same calculation when you're dating?
You're always supposed to try to help people grow.
So let's say you're dating someone that's addicted to drugs. And, you know, you expect that they'll probably become, you know, unaddicted, they'll get over it, and then you'll have a great relationship. Why not? In other words, the point I'm trying to make is that you have to date the person that's in front of you. Especially when you're talking about people that have had a relationship in the past. So we sort of anticipate, oh, well, you know, we're heading here. This is where we want to be. Okay, but that's not where we're at. So you have to be able to say, I'm marrying the person that's in front of me. And not that, well, I like the person in front of me, but this and this, but I'll change them. You can't do that.
I like the person in front of me, but in the future she plans on changing this.
You can't do that. The person is who they are. So if you're not willing to marry, of course we anticipate we're all going to grow together, and you have to marry someone that's growth-oriented that says that. There are certain people in the world that are not interested in growing. They've reached their plateau, they're comfortable where they are, and I'm not interested in going anywhere. That's a bad midah. We're supposed to be people that are always growth-oriented. We're always trying to grow, make life more meaningful, look for new ways of inspiring ourselves and getting to different places. We need to be growth-oriented. So you definitely need to find out that a girl is growth-oriented, that's for sure. But not to the extent that we're not willing to accept the person that's in front of us. We're only willing to marry this imaginary person that they want to turn into. I've seen that also. That's not good.
What if you know yourself and like you know where you're holding a certain level? You date this, you start dating a girl, and she's like holding on a much higher level than you. You like that. Would it be selfish in a way to marry her? Because you may end up bringing her down. I'm not saying you will, but maybe you're hoping that she'll bring you up.
There has to be a lot of communication about things like that. She has to know who you are because she has the same cheshbon on her side. Am I willing to marry this guy when I see that he's not exactly where I am? You know, so if she really feels, no, that might not be a good dynamic. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Depends on what's going on. But there definitely has to be a lot of communication over who I am, where I am, where I want to be, but that's not where I am. And then her being willing to accept who he is now, not saying, well, you know, he's going to grow and then I'm going to marry the guy that I'm imagining. It's really the same point I'm making. Just in the reverse, because if you're talking to the girls, you're going to make the same point. Yeah.
Do you have to be more ready than the girl is in a way? Because you're the man. She was taken from us, from our life.
I don't know. What do you mean?
Do we have to be more ready than... Because we're going to be the ones like leading the relationship, kind of.
Everyone's personality is different.
Yes, partner.
Everyone's personality is different. Rav Arush in that same Sefer, so he points out that what many men today don't act like the classic man. The man is so in Kabbalah is the mashpia, is the one that's giving. And the woman is the mekabela, she's the one that's receiving. So everyone's personality is different. But what he's trying to say is that what a man needs to strive to be is a person that's giving and giving and giving and trying to wean himself away from taking, taking, taking. It's a struggle. It's a challenge because some people are more emotionally needy and we have to know ourselves and we have to communicate that to our wives also. So that's something that has to... Again, communication is the most critical thing that's ever going to happen in a marriage. Even when you have kids, you have friends. You know, we all know that in our relationships, we make assumptions. And whenever you make assumptions, so that's a problem in the dynamic of the relationship because I don't know what you're thinking. So you have to tell me if something's bothering you. And I don't know I'm doing anything that's bothering you. So tell me. I care about you. And we have to assume other people care about us. You can't assume people are out to get us. So whenever we have conversations with people, we have to let people know what's going on. You know, this is I find this offensive. I find this, you know, difficult. You know, this is uncomfortable for me. Okay, so then I'll adjust. I certainly don't want to affect our dynamic or relationship.
Are you supposed to share things while you're dating? Are you supposed to share things that are more personal, like maybe if, whether you're a virgin or not, or whether you're, I don't know, where you're holding and that type of stuff? Because maybe like a girl wants a certain, I don't know, maybe a guy wants a girl that's...
I think that that there are certain questions that might bother a girl that she may want to ask you. But there's... Rav Avigdor Miller was very big on this. He thought that it's important that each spouse has respect for the other one. And because of that, a person should never be putting themselves down. So for a person to be saying, ugh, I'm terrible because I did this, ugh, I'm terrible, if that's the perspective a person's coming from, like, I just want you to know how bad I've been or, you know, where I've been because I'm, you know, I'm full of schmutz. So that's not a positive thing. If there's certain things that she has concerns about, I imagine that she'll try to ask them in whatever way she's going to try to ask them. But certainly a person needs to make sure that they're presenting themselves as a respectable person to the spouse. And that works in both directions. Obviously, there are things that are going to bother us and things that you know, we feel we failed at or whatever, and we're looking for chizuk, you know, in the other person. But at the same time, we have to be careful that we're not trying to present ourselves as a person that doesn't deserve respect. Because it's important that this spouse have respect for the other one. So he was very big on not just you know, telling all of your chesronos. Interesting perspective.
Isn't that how you have respect for yourself? You know you've done what you've done, but you're still trying to get better. Isn't that respect? Instead of just holding off the truth.
We're not sure. You're saying something else now. Say it again.
No, because he's saying telling them all the bad stuff you've ever done. Like, and if you don't tell them,
I'm saying you should not be telling your spouse all the bad things about yourself, all your
Why?
Failures.
Because I respect myself, I know what I've done, and I know who I am now, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, you're saying because a person would respect someone that grew. So yeah. If I tell you where I used to be and where I am now,
yeah.
maybe, but it depends on what we're talking about.
Okay.
You know, when a person says, you know, I really used to have some anger issues, and now I've really, you know, so perhaps that you know that does show that a person is willing to grow or whatever. But to then go ahead and say, like, wow, you know, I used to say this to this person. I said this to this person. I said this to the person. Give examples. So the person says, whoa. You know, that's very different. It's, okay, so we didn't really spell it out. I didn't spell it at all.
I mean, it's hard because I know that everyone's different.
Yeah, so when is a person, though? I get the sense that there are certain people that are focused on school, they're focused on other things, and because of that, they don't really feel like they need to get married. And other people that are starting to feel very lonely, starting to feel like it's just not, you know, I need to get married, like I need a wife. So that certainly is indicative that a person should be starting to head in that direction. If there's a person that really, you know, is having a lot of taiva issues that are just not able to get under control, so again, I go back to what I said before, if it's something that really needs to be addressed in a different way, maybe it should be addressed in a different way. But if it's just in the realm of normal, so then maybe it's really a good idea for that reason even to get married. Now, I will tell you an interesting is, so you may not appreciate this, but there is a phrase you may not have heard called young and dumb. Have you heard this before? Young and dumb. It's good to get married young and dumb. That the older a person gets, it becomes very complicated. It's almost a catch-22. People have been out on hundreds, they've been dating hundreds of girls. Now, what that does often to a person, and it's a yetzer hara, but you can understand it, is that a person says, I'm looking for A, B, C, D, E. Some of them may be legit, some of them may not be legit, but he's looking for A, B, C, D, E, that's what he claims. This girl, number one, had A... to 100%, and this rankings. What percentage of A, B, C, D, E did each girl have? And it's unbelievable. He's never once found his Basher. Because his Basher has A, B, C, D, E 100%. And D, E, F, G, you know, they're only 2% or 0. And...
that's horrible.
So what happens is that every girl gets compared with every other girl that he dated. And now he can't marry any of them. Because how can I marry this one when that one was better? So if I marry this one, I'm settling for where I could have had that. It's like, he's settle for this one. And then he ends up not getting married.
Or if he does get married, he has resentment.
Right, or if he finally gives in, then he's like, well, she's never, I should have married the other one. What did I do?
That's really bad.
So the idea is that you want to avoid that at all costs. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is paving the way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ishali. This week's parasha, last week's parasha. So it says that Eliezer ben Avram, he goes and he finds this wife for Yitzchak, and he works it out, like I told you, that it's like a nace when it should not have been. Why did he do that? So Chazal say that from Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, you say, May Hashem Isha Le'ish. That Kadosh Baruch Hu paves the way. Kadosh Baruch Hu is providing the wife for the man. Which means to say that while we have to do our degree of Hishtadlus, you have to make sure that you are only dating a girl that makes sense. And you are getting involved in situations that are not going to blind you. But be that as... so once a person is doing that, so a person has a right to say, this is the girl that was presented to me. This is a possible marriage opportunity. Does it make sense? Or as a Kadosh Baruch Hu trying to teach me something maybe about myself, this is not the right way to go. Okay, so maybe it's not the right one. But there are every single girl that we go out with, we have to have the perspective that I have to be ready to marry her. Is this possible? Because Kadosh Baruch Hu is sending her to me. And not to start making these kashbarnas about, you know, like this one, more or less, whatever. Can you see it or can you not see it?
How long do you date the girl for?
By the fourth date, you should definitely have an idea if this is really shaykh.
Because then also, if you do it longer than that, you slow it up, you're kind of dragging the girl along with you.
Right, but what I'm saying is, you yourself should know if this is possible.
And then shaykh, what happens in that?
So now, after the fourth date, things have to start getting more serious. Conversations have to start... Okay, so there are different mahalchim about this. Honestly, I think I'm speaking only from experience here, really, more than anything else. It's very, there's a lot of tension on a date, a real date, because it means we're both looking at each other with, you know, a magnifying glass, because I want to know if this is the right person for me to get married. So that's very uncomfortable. So how do you, at one time, let's say it like this. One extreme is, so let's just do something fun together where we're not having any conversations and we don't learn anything about each other. Okay, so that's not good. The other extreme is, let's sit down face to face and, like, you know, talk this through. Okay, that's very uncomfortable.
You say, okay, how many kids do you want?
Okay, hold on one second. I'm saying just in terms of the structure. So to try and find a middle ground where there's something to look at, you're going somewhere, whether it's a museum, whether it's a toy store, you go someplace where there's something to look at that can start the conversations, so that way we're schmoozing, not like interviewing each other in this heavy-duty way, but at the same time, hopefully enough conversations come out that in a comfortable way that we're learning about each other. Try to find that balance in terms of the date. Now, what kind of things do you want to know? So first of all, most of the basics you should know already. Well, what kind of family does she come from? Where did she go to school in Eretz Yisrael? Like, you know, where is she now? Like, what is she? You know, those types of things you should know already before the date. But you're still going to want to talk it through. You know, you're still going to say something like, what interests you? And you know, what do you like to learn about? And what are your dreams? What are your visions? What does your family look like? Where do you want to live? Like, all those kinds of things that we think about a lot, those are the kinds of things you want to make sure, like, we're on the same page about.
The same person doesn't know, like, specific. Like, you can't expect a 20-year-old or 21-year-old. 24-year-old have his dreams defined already. I think that's a very high expectation.
I think most people know if they want to live in the United States or if they want to live in Eretz Yisrael.
You could have basic, maybe you could have basic things like that, but like it gets kind of hard, I guess, for young people to exactly nail down. Boom, 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 boom.
Like what though?
Where do you want to? Let's say you want to live in the United States. Which type of neighborhood do you want to live in?
Okay, but
very
modern Orthodox, more Haredi, you know, like what?
Terms, yeah,
exactly.
You have general terms, that's but you can't have specifics.
Yeah, no, because even, you know, even when you get married, you start figuring out what communities are there, where do I want to live, when I move? Yeah, that's a practicality. But just to try and, you know, philosophically, where is this person? Where? What's their vector? What was the vector over here? Like, where do they see themselves? Because you have to make sure you see yourself there, because if you don't, that's not going to work. We're good. We're all set. We're ready now. So how do you know when you're ready? You know, so on the one hand, you have to know if you're feeling like emotionally this is something that you want and that you need, and if a person's really not interested, so then okay, so who says you need to get involved with it yet? You know, so wait. Your focus is right now on learning or whatever, and you're still growing, so that's great. But it's important to make sure that you are ready to get married when you're younger, as opposed to waiting until you're older. Because what tends to happen, the person gets older, they start dating more and more people, and they, you know, there's more idealism and more, the person's readier to make jumps when they're younger than when they're older. So the older person gets, it gets much, much harder to get married.
More calculated.
Yeah, and it's more than that. It's that people fall into routines as they get older, and a real older person, they're like really stuck in like, this is the way I do things. And then to get married and have to change that is really a big deal. You speak to older people who, Rahman al-Islam, you know, their spouse was nifter or whatever, and they're talking about like getting remarried, and they'll tell you, I can't even think about it. Like, I spent my whole life like this, and now I have to like marry someone and like change that? Nah, that's not happening. You see it by older people, right? That they fall into like routines and like the ways of doing things, and like they can't change it. It's like, that's my life. Like, that's how I am. You have to try not to be like that, I'm saying. You have to try to be flexible people. But when a person's younger, we're more willing to. What?
One of the biggest like parts, like there's elementary school, middle school, high school, college, marriage. It's like, marriage is so big.
Marriage comes after college, that's how it works. It's like an like educational institution.
In big moments of your life, in big things that happen, like marriage is enormous. It's like one of the craziest.
Oh, yes.
It's the biggest.
It's the biggest decision that you're going to. But you don't need to worry about it because Mei Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ish Elish. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to present you with the right one. All you got to do is just make sure that it makes sense. Make sure on paper that it makes sense. And then you'll find the one that you'll see that you have the chemistry with. You see that she has Yiras Shamayim.
As your brother's brother got engaged.
That's tough.
So, I worked with an
So you don't need to be nervous. In all seriousness, it's an area of bitachon, but it's an area where it's rig mafurish. It's mafurish in Chazal. Kadosh Baruch Hu is paving the way. It's not like a lot of other things that require a tremendous ishtablos. You just got to make sure you're doing it right. Because if a person's not doing things right, Kadosh Baruch Hu will send up a share in that direction too. But that's not what we want. We want to make sure that we're getting the person that's right for us. So you got to do it right. You got to make sure that it makes sense. And then you make sure that there's chemistry and that she has Yiras Shamayim. Things tend to work themselves out. As long as there's a commitment to us and a commitment to communicating to make sure that we work everything out. So you don't need to be nervous. Anything else? I don't know if there's anything else particularly that I have to say.
What are some good traits that we should be looking for?
Well, number one is obviously that she wants to grow. That you want a woman who's a balas chesed. So what you're looking for is, you know, people ask ridiculous questions like, you know, like, well, you know, what would you do in such a situation? You don't know what you're going to do in such a situation in the future. But you see a person now, like, well, what kind of things are you involved in? I like to play Minecraft. You know, like, oh, that's interesting. Do you spend any time doing Bikur Cholim? You know, like, you know, what do you do Shabbos morning? Do you want a woman that's makpid to go to shul? Do you want a woman that's not makpid to go to shul? Do you want a woman that is helping people, that's doing, you know, you can tell, what is this girl doing with her time? That's a yisod, I think I mentioned to you before, that in Mishle, so the Pasuk tells us, Shlomo HaMelech, so he tells us that Matzreif lekesef ekur lezav, if you want to know about silver, you go to the Matzreif, the one that purifies it. He knows what its composition is. The kur lezahav, you know about gold, you go to the kur who does the same thing. The ish, the fima halalo, according to his praise. So the first time you hear that, it sounds like Shlomo HaMelech is saying, you ask people about her. His praise. What do people say about his reputation? So that's obvious. Shlomo HaMelech is trying to say chiddush. What he's saying is, the ish, the fima halalo, a man. Not by his composition, who purified him, there's no such thing. That would be his reputation, maybe. No. What it means is, what does he praise? When you talk to this person, what do they talk about? What are their interests? So then you see where a person's holding. So are they talking about the latest, you know, this, that, the other thing? Are they talking about the chassadim they did? Are they talking about this amazing rabbi they just met? Are they talking about this amazing inspirational story they just read? Like, what are they thinking about? What are they doing with their time? What do they praise? What do they value? So those types of things, you know, a couple of conversations, like, you know, so what did you hear today? What interesting things happened today? You know, whatever. I don't know how to get them out of a person exactly, but yeah. So you can see insight into a person by the things that they like to praise. They like to talk about.
Does age matter? Like, how do you, like, in general, when you get set up, is it usually about your age?
Most men don't like to date older women. Doesn't necessarily for good reasons, but men, generally speaking, are more comfortable feeling like they're sort of like the older person in the relationship and looked up to as the man, and they feel that if the woman is older, that's like, oh, so that's like my mother. Because she's older than me. That's not exactly legit, but people feel that way, so, you know.
If you can do it, it makes you even better. It makes you even more than
that. Yeah, if you're 21 and like, you're getting married soon, like, you can be like an 8, 17-year-old. Like, to be older, it's like, it's weird. 17-year-olds are okay. 18's okay. Yeah, it's very usually immature though. Maturity comes with age usually, and especially when you're around 18, 19 years old, there lacks a certain maturity that you would have in 21, 22.
I think
depends on the person. Maturity depends on the person.
I think women have that maturity at a younger age.
What?
I think women have that maturity at a younger age. They can be the same thing from 17 to 19 or 21.
Often, but just keep in mind that there's a lot of maturity that comes with life experience. So the more a person's been through, the more they've been forced to adjust to the situations. So while I agree with you, I find it also that in general, women are more mature than men in general, but a guy that's been through certain experiences, and then to compare to a person that hasn't, it's a little challenging. Imagine a guy that comes from Eretz Yisrael, and he's been in the army. And he comes to YU, and he's sitting in class with these guys that are like, in his eyes, very immature. You know, look at the kinds of things that he's been through. Look at the... I mean, he's seen Rahman al-Salam, and these guys have seen people been killed. You know, there's a lot of maturity that comes to these types of responsibilities and those types of situations. And then other people are just like, you know, they like joke about it because they don't even understand the gravity and the impact it has upon a person. It's also, you know, even though a person may be very mature, but until you're in certain situations, it's very difficult to really have that growth. A lot of people, I don't know, I can't give like a specific example, but a lot of times you'll be like offended. Like, how could the person say that? Now, you're offended because you've been in this situation. That person's never been in this situation. And so they don't appreciate your sensitivity. Because they just haven't been there yet. They'll get there. But they don't have the sensitivity up because they're in the situation. So that, you know, that could be an issue.
On another note, don't go to eight, ten chakras in Reuben.
Why?
We finished from start to finish at 8:40. The 30-minute chakras was the worst thing I've ever experienced. I got to stay another 15 minutes. And I got there 10 minutes early. I still had to stay another 10 minutes after to finish.
Wow.
30 minutes. How can I really... Would it have been long? I held myself back. But I was going to go to the guy to the ball to be loud and say, thanks for bringing my thought in.
No, because he's making other people's not. Think about how many kids are only going because it's their...
No, but I can't think about that because it's a Sunday morning where people really are in a rush and there's no possible way. I don't understand how people can even pray that. I don't.
It's a bigger problem than just that. It's a bigger problem than just that. You know, minyanim that go too fast are a bigger problem than the particular guy that's davening. Because if that's the mahalach of the minyan, it means that people are coming because they want to just get tefillah out of the way.
I understand.
So for you to say that you're offended by it, so he'll say daven somewhere else.
No, but I do think that a lot of minyanim here are like that. Majority, if that.
Unfortunately, you know, tefillah is something that needs to be worked on and is not worked on a lot.
No, but I just couldn't understand how it's actually possible. Like, no, actually physically possible to say the word that fast. I think I tried that in my fastest. I couldn't do it. They literally said Shema in about 45 seconds. I don't see how that.
You get the impression that people are scanning the words with their eyes and not saying them with their mouth.
100%. There's no possible way.
There are people who can actually say that fast, but like, they don't really think about it.
Rav Kahn once told a guy to record himself davening and then play it back on slow speed.
Yeah.
And the guy was shocked to realize that he actually wasn't saying the words.
No, Rebbe, I was thinking about that while I was davening. I was so distracted by this whole thing. It really bothered me. And I was thinking, I really want to go to him and tell him, I want you to record yourself davening. I really want to hear what you're saying in slow motion because there's no possible way you're able to even say it like a modern.
I usually don't make comments, but I was davening comments. But I was davening at a particular shul on Sukkot, and here I am. How many days of Sukkot are there? I've got my lulav and my esrog, and I'm gonna say halal. And he just ran through it, and I pasha couldn't catch up. It was not possible. I got to do nanuim.
You do twice a year.
I couldn't. So I approached him afterwards, and I didn't say thank you for ruining my davening, you know. But I said, you know, I really think that was too fast. And you know, we only have how many times with you? How many times did we say halal the entire year? In addition to that, this is Sukkot. You know, you got lulav in your esrog. Like, how, you know, this is a special time. You know, we need to do it right. So I did make a comment. He didn't answer. But. I was very upset. I felt like he took it away from me. He took an opportunity away from me.
I love that being Spartan in here. It's always a good place. Right? You know? I'm just trying to flip out. Another thing, no one's talking, I was in Springfield, Massachusetts this past Shabbos, Thanksgiving to Shabbat. And I've had they only have like very non-Orthodox shuls up there in New England. You know, there's nothing else like that. It's like very, 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 very modern. To the point where the women were saying Kaddish louder than the men. Like really loud. And like they were singing along with the tunes and they were very loud. So I was just wondering, what are the issues with women saying Kaddish really loud? So it's overpowering where you know for sure that it is like some ulterior motive over there. And also, at Sudash Yeshiva, which was something I don't see anything wrong with this, but like, this is something totally new to me. I've never seen this. At Sudash Yeshiva, the person giving the bor was a woman. So
they went up and she like gave a whole Torah. It was cute. If she gave good Torah, it was awesome. Like, I was wondering, what are the problems that may arise from these things? Because I know there is a lot of basis for it, because it happens to be that one woman I know, and she happens to be very firm when it comes to halacha and tzniut and stuff like that. Tzniut clothing wise, I don't know about otherwise, but that's so. What do you think?
Yeah.
I know it's a
you know, it's what they call a sensitive topic, but it really depends on where you're coming from, you know.
I think
I mentioned before that snias means ba'etzem to try to remain hidden. And Rosh Hashanah likes to say that we learn from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're supposed to do things, major things, in ways where we're not noticed. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. That's the way that he runs the world. So we're supposed to be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu to whatever extent we can. Some of us are put into situations where we have to do certain things in a very public way. And, you know, you try to avoid it, but listen, you know, somebody's got to be the Rav and someone has got to direct people. And people appreciate it and people need it. So if the situation comes up and you're put in that type of situation, so, okay. But it's not something that you want. It's not something you look for. It's not something you take, you know, pride in the sense that, like, oh, you know, I'm going to lord this over somebody and tell them what to do because I'm the Rav. It's something that you say, listen, you know, I feel a responsibility. So, if a person's put into those types of situations, so, okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to be in those types of situations, but we don't look for it. We don't try to do those types of things. Tznius, in general, and I'm saying this in the most abstract way, tznius is a protection, is a shmira. What's it called? Rav Shimshon Pinkus. See, he has a whole sefer that he wrote for women. And this is one of the major points. Yeah. One of the major points he makes over there is that tznius is a shmira. Now, to understand that on the most abstract level, when a person puts himself into public eye, when people are watching him, people are looking at him, people are judging him. And that's what we call ayin hara. Ayin hara means that people are thinking, wow, is this person really deserving of the position and all the things that he has? And that's coming the opposite direction. The person speaking may have stage fright. But in terms of the people listening, so the people are all judging him. That's a big danger. That's a big sakana. You always, always want to avoid people judging you. So you don't want to put yourself into a situation where people are going to have what to say about you. You don't drive a fancy car. You don't get a big fancy house. You don't do things that are going to draw attention to yourself. It's not sanua. Now, who cares about being tzanua? Why do I have to be tzanua? So the answer is, number one, because we want to imitate a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And number two, because you're putting yourself in a big sakana. Tznius is a shmira for that. So when a person is tzanua, he's protected by being in the background. He's protected by not having those ayin haras. He's protected by people who are not looking at him. Now, kal v'chomer, if you're talking about a woman, especially if she's like an attractive woman, and she's going to put herself on stage, and she's going to be in front of all the men speaking this, that, and the other thing, so that's very, very challenging for a man not to think about her in a way where he's not looking at her as a female. So she's at risk. And all the responsibility that she bears the responsibility for that. Now, okay, it may be worth it. It may be that a person's in the Chama Leibowitz is going to have tremendous impact on people. It could be. But it's a cheshbon that has to be made. Is that really worthwhile? Do you really want that? I remember we had a very strange shayla that my wife was nursing, and so the midwife, I don't know whoever it was, wanted to know if she would be willing to demonstrate like breastfeeding or something like that. Some group of people, lactation people, whatever. I don't know, women, maybe men, I don't know. But it was an educational thing. Would you want your wife doing that? Yeah, that's a no. What do you mean? It's just an educational thing.
I haven't thought about that.
So these are the kinds of things, like, you know, what do you compare what to? What's a valid mushel? But point is, you never want to be on stage for anything unless it's absolutely necessary. And you feel that this is what has to happen for a Kaddish Baruch Hu's world. Okay, so then, you know, you're at risk, but you risk yourself for a Kaddish Baruch
Hu. But it doesn't seem like there's anything actually
halachically. The halachas would be, is there really a lifnei iver lo titen mechshol here? Is a person, you know, going to cause people to do things wrong? You know, is the whole Kaddish discussion is a halachic discussion. But at the same time that it's a halachic discussion, if there are other people that are saying Kaddish for this relative, then why is the woman saying Kaddish for the relative? Why is that necessary? So usually the answer is because it's like a feminist type of thing. Now, once you enter into that realm of things, we've discussed this a number of times already. So that's a question of a value system that's outside the Torah, and is it destructive to the Torah's value system?
Let's say there's no one else who says Kaddish.
So that's a bigger issue. It's a legitimate question. In other words, if a woman says, listen, there's nobody in the family who say Kaddish, is it better that I say Kaddish, or is it better that I do other things as a
the Eloi for the Rishon? I understand that you don't have to, Yiskadash, it doesn't have to be super loud. I understand you can be more modest about it as opposed to trying to.
Let's say there's no one else in the minion.
Even if there was no one else in the minion. There were.
So let's say you say it so.
You should say it quietly. No, you should say it so loud, for sure. If there's no one else in the minion, then it's a question of should you be saying Kaddish.
She's a woman.
But then again, even if. This was just over the top. I've never seen something like this.
Let's say you go for the pizza hire.
Aren't you supposed to sing louder than me? Dude, there are more women at the shul than men. How weird is that?
In terms of the particular issue of Kol Isha, so there were those poskim that pointed out that if you're talking about a whole group of women that you can't recognize any particular voice, you don't know who's singing, so then that's not an issue of Kol Isha. That was a big issue by these B'nai Akiva events where there's going to be a whole group of women singing, but you're not looking at them, and you can't pick out any particular voice. Chacham Avadia, see, he says that he thinks if you're talking about listening to a recording or something like that, and you have no idea what she looks like, then he thinks that that's not an issue. I'm not sure that exists, because if you're listening on your electronic device, I think her picture's there. So...
One of my dorm friends was in Shiva, but always listen to Kodisha, music with Kodisha. Total Ashkenaz, but he looked very Shiva, and he's can you use that? And I was he was listening to Rihanna. And I was like, I don't know what she looks like.
For me, there's a song that I didn't know how she looked like, and she's and I imagined her as being because her voice was beautiful, so I imagined.
Yeah, that's also a thing.
And then when I saw her picture, I was actually mad at it.
Josh! I love Josh. I'll share.
Have a great day.
Okay, Atalacha.